Accessible science. I'm probably butchering his presentation because I don't exactly know what company he worked for. So before I butcher it anymore, I'm going to turn it over to Michael Hinkson. Michael, take it away.
Thank you. Thanks, Kat. I have never spoken right after Maggie has spoken, but I really love the opportunity. It's a great lead-in for some of the things I want to talk about. And so let me start by asking all of you some questions. We'll make it rhetorical for the moment. We may come back to some of this, but why is it that somebody was able to even discover non-24 and develop medications to help? Or if we want to come up with simpler things, why is it that if you have butter at room temperature and you put it in your refrigerator, it gets hard? Or why does Jell-O become more solid when you put it in the refrigerator? Why is it that Coke and other cola and some non-cola products fizz when you pour them into a glass? What is carbonation all about? All relevant questions that science has answered. And traditionally, we have not, as blind people, been able to participate in a lot of that science, which is why I'm here today. As Kat said, I'm Michael Hinkson. Probably many of you have heard of me because I worked in the World Trade Center on September 11th, 2001, and escaped with my guide dog, Roselle. And not only lived to tell the story, but for the past 19 years, I have been a keynote public speaker talking about teamwork and trust, the lessons to be learned from September 11th, and talking about some of my life history, including the fact that I went to the University of California at Irvine in Southern California, where we had some fires this week, unfortunately, but the university is fine and most people are getting back to normal. And I obtained a master's degree in physics. Now, it was a little bit more of a challenge than it should have been to get a master's degree in physics. And although I went on to do some scientific work working for Dr. Ray Kurzweil and the National Federation of the Blind on the original development of the Kurzweil reading machine, due to other circumstances, I ended up going into sales. But even while in sales and not directly in the science field, I worked in the high-tech industry. And also, because of my training in science, I think I was a better person to be in the sales environment and to undertaking sales efforts than I would have been without that. And I'll get back to that in a moment. But the point is that I was able to get the master's degree, even though I could not participate in physics lab experiments. I could not directly be involved in doing the things that my sighted student colleagues were able to do. And the main reason that I couldn't, well, there were two, but the main reason that is most obvious is that the equipment was not accessible. It wasn't possible for me to read temperature gauges, read Geiger counters, to measure the pH or the amount of acidity or base content of a solution, and do a lot of the other things that students could do who could see the stuff. So I had to kind of sit back and be the reader and maybe a note taker, but I didn't get to participate in that stuff. And I think that unfortunately was a little bit of a loss because I didn't get some of the same experiences that they did. So for me, even in experimental physics, it was more theoretical than it was actually physical because I couldn't do the experiments. We have undergone some changes in our society regarding that. And that's kind of one of the reasons I'm here. I was asked earlier this year by the founder of a company called Independence Science, so the word independence and then the word science, to kind of come on and help consult and market and talk about the product that Independence Science has developed. The product that they developed is actually something that was co-created with a company called Vernier Software Technologies. It's called the LabQuest. The LabQuest is a box, and I'm not going to have enough time to really demonstrate it today. And I want to talk more about concepts and give you all a chance to ask questions. So we'll not do an experiment today directly. The LabQuest is a box, and it's the LabQuest 2 today. The box has some ports or connectors on it into which you can attach a variety of devices, typically on a cable. There are like 80 different kinds of probes. There is everything from a probe to measure temperature, to a probe to measure magnetic field strength, a probe to measure voltage accurately and extremely accurately to measure current, and even one to measure pH, which I talked about earlier. Most sighted people typically measure the pH content or the acidity content by dipping a piece of paper called litmus paper into a solution and watching for the color change. Okay, that gives you a fairly decent idea of what the pH is, but it doesn't give you an accurate idea and an accurate solution to what the pH of any solution is. On the other hand, with the LabQuest device attaching the right probe and sticking it into the solution, you can get the absolute value of pH at any given time. One of the experiments that I like to do is to take two airborne tablets, you know, Airborne, the cold product that helps keep colds away, so they say, I think it does. That's a different story. But take two airborne tablets and get a glass of water or a cup of water. And what I do for an experiment oftentimes is to take two different probes that I connect into the LabQuest at the same time. One measures the temperature of the water, in this case, and the other will measure the pH. And I stick the two probes into the water, and the LabQuest talks. It tells me exactly what the probes see, which is really pretty cool. So when I put the probes into the water, typically the temperature of the water is somewhere around 75 degrees Fahrenheit, and the pH of the water, by the time everything settles, is about 6.3. We won't worry about what all that means. That means, though, it's fairly close to being neutral between the amount of acid content or the amount of base content of the water. So don't worry about the chemistry right now, just accept the numbers. Then I drop the two airborne tablets in, and several things happen. First thing that happens is, as you're listening to the LabQuest, the temperature of the water goes down. The second thing that happens is the pH level of the water goes down. And typically in the experiments that I've done, by the time we're completed, the temperature of the water is somewhere between 72.5 and 72.9 degrees instead of 75. And the pH content or the pH measurement of the water drops from 6.3 to 4.8, which means that the airborne tablets are actually introducing a little bit more acid content into the water. The more fun thing, though, is why does the temperature of the water go down? Again, a scientific question and something that I should be able to participate in studying. And now with the Talking LabQuest, I and any other blind student who wants to be involved or in any way partake of science, or people who want to work in the scientific fields who need to make measurements relating to different kinds of things, can do so using the Talking LabQuest. And that is pretty cool. And I think that it's important that now we have the opportunity to take advantage of those things, which we could not do before. There's another problem, though, that I somewhat faced when I was going to college, and which is the more potentially prevalent problem today, and that's attitudes. When I was getting my master's degree, I had occasion to have the opportunity to look at my student file. And in the file, there was a letter from one of the professors in the physics department where I was studying. Fortunately, it was not a person who I ever had as a professor. But the letter said, and it was there in the file for the world to see if they looked at the file, no blind person could ever absorb the material to get to attain an advanced degree in physics. No blind person could absorb the information and the material necessary to get an advanced degree. So is this person saying that because a person is blind, their brain changes so much that they can't do it? or just that they can't see it. Either way, the attitude is bogus, it's wrong, and is totally inappropriate. But we still see it today. We see it all too often in everything that we do, science or otherwise. But in the world of science especially, it's a problem, because I always thought that scientists were supposed to be open-minded. Well, we know that that's not necessarily the case. There are any number of examples of where science has limited, in some ways, some of our thinking, and shouldn't. And other people do too, because scientists are, after all, human, and they're victims of the same world and the same society in which we live. Quick illustration of that: no blind person until the mid-1980s, and no, I think, person with a physical disability could buy life insurance simply because we couldn't see. It took Jim Ombig of the National Federation of the Blind challenging insurance companies by saying to someone, "Now, you guys do scientific modeling of everything that you do, and every decision that you make is based on science, right?" And this particular person said, "Yes." And Mr. Ombig continued by saying, "Well, you guys all say that blind people can't get life insurance because we're a higher risk than sighted people, and you've clearly made that determination based on scientific data, right?" And this person said back to Mr. Ombig, "Well, yes, obviously that's the case." Mr. Ombig then said, "Would you please show us that data?" And the guy said, "Sure." 6 months went by and no data ever appeared. And as it turns out, no data ever appeared because the scientific people didn't have it. It wasn't there. There was no such animal that said that blind people were a higher risk. But the scientists said we were. It was based on prejudice. Science and scientists need to keep an open mind. By the way, we can get insurance today because the National Federation of the Blind led a team effort of a number of disabilities groups, and we were major proponents of getting every state to pass a law that said that no insurance company could discriminate and deny life insurance to any person who is blind or had a physical disability unless they could demonstrate through actuarial statistics and evidentiary data, insurance terms, that blind people were a higher risk. But the science originally, all through prejudice, said that we were a risk. It's necessary for scientists to keep an open mind, and it is something that anytime any blind student who wants to participate in science runs into, anytime that any student encounters someone who says, "Well, but you're blind, you can't participate in those experiments," the answer to that is, how do you know? Where is your proof? Where is the evidence? Have you ever tried blindness? I got a call from someone last week from a school on the East Coast who has a student who wants to participate in science. But the problem is that the school has said this person cannot participate in any lab experiment unless there is someone specifically in the room with them. That's just wrong. If the student doesn't succeed, the student doesn't succeed. Now, it is true that the student needs to learn some things and hasn't probably had the opportunity to learn some of the techniques and the procedures that their sighted colleagues have learned. And that's the fault of the school district. But to say that we must be monitored, to say that we can't participate without being monitored, is as wrong as any scientist saying no blind person could ever possibly absorb the information and material necessary to get an advanced degree in physics. That's the real attitude that we face today. Independent science is as much promoting the concept of blind people being able to work in the scientific field as it is a company that is saying that we can help by providing the technology to allow you to participate in laboratory experiments. If you visit www.independencescience.com, you can learn more about some of what they're doing. And you're also welcome to contact me if you'd like to talk about any of this. I'm easy to get on email. It's mike@michaelhingson.com. That's mike@michaelhingson.com. And I'd love to answer any questions with regard to independent science and the talking lab quests and all that sort of stuff. I will always respond to emails, and it'll probably end up being that we will have a chat about it on the phone or on a Zoom call, but I would love to do that. But the bottom line is, blind people can participate in science. STEM2U, the program of the National Federation of the Blind, proves it every time the program occurs. The EQ program that the Federation has set up again demonstrates it. Blind people have worked to build sounding rockets and launch them from NASA Wallops in Virginia. There's so many things that we've done. Science is what led to the development of the vehicle technology President Rick Obono used to drive an automobile around the Daytona Speedway right before the Rolex 24 race in 2011. And I was there when that happened. If you've never seen the video of Mark driving the car, you ought to watch it. It's at www.blinddriverchallenge.org. It's really cool. And you can see firsthand President Rick Obono, before he was president, driving a car around the Rolex 20 or around the Daytona Speedway, avoiding obstacles and doing a number of things that people would say no blind person could do. And he didn't have anybody telling him what to do. It was a totally independent thing. It all came about from science and from the National Federation of the Blind working with universities and companies to develop the technology that allowed that to happen. No, blind people absolutely can be involved in science and participate today in so many different areas. There are some people who are being very successful in the scientific community, and more people can do that. So if you have any interest in science, if you are a student, you ought to pursue it. Don't ever let anyone tell you that blindness is going to prevent you from doing so. If you are someone who is asked by another blind person, gee, can blind people really do that? Your immediate answer should be yes. Whether you know all the details or not, your immediate answer should be yes. If you need more information, you can get it from the National Center. Or as I said, contact me at mike@michaelhingson.com. And again, also go to independentscience.com. Independent Science is just releasing something new. It's an accessible periodic table of all the elements where you can actually go in and not only read all information about each element, like its atomic weight, its atomic number, and a bunch of other stuff, but it's in a form that makes it extremely accessible. The Talking Lab Quest is available, and if it is not available through local schools or through the Department of Rehabilitation in Connecticut, I want to talk to somebody about addressing that. And I would like to do that sooner than later, because there's no reason that these products cannot be made available for blind students to be able to allow us and allow them specifically to access science. So why does butter get hard when it gets put in the refrigerator? Good scientific explanation. First of all, it gets hard because there's a lot of fat in it, and fat gets more solid when it gets colder. Why does it get more solid? Because the molecules slow down. That's a real simple answer. Why did the water drop in temperature when I put the airborne tablets in the water? It's due to something called an endothermic reaction. Now we're getting real technical, right? An endothermic reaction basically is taking energy out of the water in order to dissolve the pills. And when you take energy out of something, it makes it colder. The molecules slow down and all the things that I talked about just a second ago. And the airborne tablets dissolve, the water is a little bit cooler, and you have something you can drink that hopefully might help with the cold. There's a lot of science involved in those things. There's a lot of science involved in everything we do. So here's one for you. Light is electromagnetic radiation. Don't worry about what that is right now, but probably you know. Radio waves like AM and FM radio also consists of electromagnetic radiation. Why is it that our eyes can't see the radiation that radio waves are composed of and only can see light? So why can't I watch or listen to my sports games or music with my eyes, since it's all electromagnetic radiation? I'll leave that one for you to look up. But I'd like to go ahead and stop and see if anyone has any questions. And again, if you'd like to chat later, we can do that. But if you have any questions, would love to take them.
Also now unmuted.
Mike, this is Art Cohen from Delaware. I really enjoyed your book. The the magnetic box that you just talked about, is the speech really clear on that? I'd love to hear it one day and see how it sounds.
And I just didn't have a chance to set it up, and I knew that the presentation was kind of short. It's pretty clear. The speech isn't as good as I would like just coming out of the box, so it has Bluetooth capabilities, and I connect it to a Bluetooth speaker, which really does make it sound very clear.
I enjoyed science when I was in school, too, because we did like simple experiments, like with a balloon. You would put it on a bottle and like put water in it or something, and it would like go up.
Sure. Well, if you'd like to hear the voice, if anybody would email me and we'll set up a Zoom meeting and I'll do my experiment with Airborne and we can try to do some other things as well and just have some fun with it.
Email it's mike@michaelhingson.com.
Correct. mike@michaelhingson.com.
And I have to put it in as Michael first and Mike.
mike@michaelhingson, right. Next question. Don't be shy.
Hi, Michael. This is Carol King Reeves. Can you hear me?
I can. I do.
Yes.
Now tell me scientifically why. No, go ahead.
Why you can hear me?
Exactly. It's like, why is the sky blue? But go ahead.
There's a reason why. But I was just, number one, we did read your book as a book club, our book club for NFB Northern Chapter, or actually our affiliate. We're at Thunderdog last month, and it was very, it was just very informative, and I'm so glad, and I've been recommending it to people. So thank you for that, as well as this presentation. And my question to you is that what's the price point for this piece of equipment for the school system, and how can we promote it even further for Delaware students?
Well, several things. I don't know exactly what the final price points are for schools and other things. I know what the list price of it is, but don't let that scare you. It's not as expensive as a Braille note. It's $2,295, and it comes with several probes. But again, pricing like that also gets worked out with the school districts and so on. I'm not directly in sales, but I'm helping the sales folks. So anyone who would like to explore it further, I am glad to help with that. But, you know, given the amount of money that schools spend on any number of different kinds of things, this is all about reasonable accommodations and making things accessible. So,
yes. Yeah,
absolutely, it makes sense to do.
Yes, I agree. I thought it was going to be higher than that. So,
well, if you want to pay more,
no,
I mean, I'll
no,
take
Michael.
The extra. It's okay. No, it's $22.95 list.
Okay.
And then there are a bunch of different kinds of probes that go anywhere from maybe $40 or $50 up to a few thousand dollars if you want the probe that will allow you to build a bridge on top of it and design the structural analysis of it. But that's a different story. Most of us don't do bridges.
Wow. Thank you.
Thank you. Who else?
Gary Wonder.
Speaking of a scientific experiment, yes, sir.
That's
how are you?
A modern day Frankenstein, no doubt.
No, that's Frankenstein.
Oh, yes. I just wanted to say thank you. You took a path that I took partially. You were much less intimidated by the words of the rehabilitation professionals and the educators than was I. I went into electronics technology and thought that I was breaking ground, but in reality, you've done it much more. And the great thing for me is that not only have you done it, but you care enough about blind people to stay involved and to give your love and your energy to what we do. And I just want to say thank you.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I got to tell you that I feel really blessed, one, to be able to do the things that you're talking about. But, you know, in reality, here's another part of my story. When I got my first guide dog, Squire, one of the people who got his guide dog, and I think it was his first also, at the same time was a gentleman named Howard Mackey. He was a diabetic, and he, I think, became blind because of that. When I went to college, it turns out my rehabilitation counselor was Howard Mackey. And I said I wanted to go into physics, and he didn't oppose it at all. which was really cool. So I was blessed that I didn't have to fight that fight with him. I had to fight other fights along the way. And when he was no longer my counselor, I had to deal with some challenges. But, you know, I also had a physics advisor. My physics advisor at UC Irvine was the dean of the School of Physical Sciences. So he was the dean of physics, chemistry, and math. His name was Frederick Rhinus. Dr. Rhinus discovered the neutrino. And he made it very clear to me himself that he didn't think that blindness had anything to do with being able to do science or not, which was cool. He had an open mind. And again, I think that I was blessed by encountering some of the right people, but they taught me, and I'm very honored and blessed to be able to continue to pass some of those attitudes back on. So Gary, thank you. Anyone else who wants to ask anything? I know it's just noon and we have to stop, but I'll be glad if anyone wants to ask anything else, if we have time, Kat. But again, mike@michaelhingson.com. I will respond to emails. And as I said, if a bunch of people want to hear the lab question and virtually play around with a little bit more, love to set up a Zoom meeting. I've got a Zoom room and we can put 100 of us in there and we can do experiments and so on.
Hello, Michael. This is Khalil.
Hi, Khalil. How are you?
Not too bad, sir. Great presentation.
Thank you.
How can, or where would I look to have science or physics or both to help me in a few innovative ideas that I've had in the past few months?
In terms of what? I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
I had an idea to three different ideas to modify an existing product. One was a massage table. Another one was utensils. Another one was a laundry bag.
Well, let me make a couple of, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
One of the things I suggest you do is reach out to the National Center and find out who, although I don't think one's been appointed yet for next year, the chair of the Science and Technology Committee is, the Research and Technology and Evaluation Committee is, for the National Federation of the Blind. That would be one way to go. Gary Wunder can certainly also connect you with some other people in the Federation who might be very interested in exploring developments of products. But the National Federation of the Blind, if you've got ideas and whether somebody will adopt them or explore with you them depends on how good your ideas are and so on. But if you're going to promote it anywhere where it's going to affect blind people, the best place to start is the National Federation of the Blind, by all means.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Most products today that we use in one way or another are influenced significantly, usually, by the National Federation of the Blind. Our efforts may be invisible, but they're there. And that's because people know the power and the breadth and depth of knowledge of people within the National Federation of the Blind, including the blind scientific community in the Federation. We have an NFB in computer science, and we have a number of different kinds of science type folks and small organizations, if you will, within the Federation. So by all means, reach out to the Federation.
I greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure. Anything else? Well, either everybody went to sleep due to non-24 or we finished our questions, I guess.
Michael, this is Carol. We did have an outstanding question from our book talk, and it was this. You got your guide dog early. Did you ever figure out, I think it was a great and masterful decision they made, but did you ever find out why they made that decision to give you your guide dog earlier than most?
Well, of course, that's changed, and younger people are getting them now. But I think I didn't participate in doing the application. My parents did, but I think that it was because we had some good recommendations from strong guide dog users, and they decided that I could handle the responsibility. I was very mobile around my local neighborhood and going to school and so on, and I think that they decided that I'd probably be able to handle getting a guide dog. Certainly from my standpoint, it's worked out really well. And now I'm on my 8th guide dog. It's been 56 and a half years since I got my first dog. Oh gosh, I'm giving away my age. But the fact is that I think it was a good decision. And by the way, anyone who's having a book club meeting on any, although I know you all discussed it, I'm perfectly happy to come on and meet with book clubs and talk about it and so on. And I really do appreciate you promoting the book. Being, as I love to say, a poor starving author, we appreciate people buying the book, and the audio copy is available. I know it's on Bard, but we love people buying books. So go to Audible and you can get it, or you can buy an audio copy from Barnes & Noble or any other place like that.
Michael, this is Khalil again. Mm-hmm. I want to say I read the book, and it was very outstanding, and a book of triumph and survival and success. And I'm glad you made it out safely.
Thank you.
Welcome, and Roselle too. One thing I had to listen to a few times in the book when you said that you were riding a bike. I didn't believe it, so I had to rewind it and listen to it again a few times. Like, did I hear that right? So
go try it.
I don't know, sir. I don't know about that one.
I know a number of people who are bike riders. Absolutely, go do it. Okay. Hey, Eric Weinmeier climbed Mount Everest. Come on.
Hey, dude. Audio now unmuted.
There was a book on that too, Michael. Yeah. I read that book too. But yeah, when I was a little boy, I used to ride a bike too.
Wow, that's amazing.
Thank you.
We can do a lot, Michael.
We can do whatever we choose to do. Absolutely. It's as simple as that.
Exactly. Yeah, we'd love to have you talk at our book club. Everybody would love to hear you. Such a nice
well,
book.
Kat, this is, well, Kat, I don't want to screw up. Oh, go ahead.
The narrator who read the book was really good.
Yeah. Well, Kat, I don't want to mess up your agenda too much.
They muted me.
Uh-oh.
Do we have any last-minute questions before our next presenter?
I have one.
Okay, Verita.
Oh, you can hear me.
Yes.
We hear you.
Okay. When I read the book, I was thinking that I wanted to ask you, when you said you took people to Germany to was it to see the passion play?
Well, Karen did that. We weren't married at the time, so my wife did that, who's in a wheelchair, by the way.
Oh, okay. Was it to see the play?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've not ever seen it. I would love to, but we're not doing that in the next little while.
Nope. I saw it. I think it was in 2000. It was wonderful.
I've heard.
Yes, very nice.
Well, thank you all again. Remember www.independencescience.com. You can email me, mike@michaelhingson.com, or go to my website, www.michaelhingson.com. And there's a lot of scientific information and a lot of information about things you can do to become more involved in science on the website www.nfb.org. Lots of stuff there. So be sure you don't close your mind to doing it. And Khalil, go ride that bike. Thanks, Kat.
Okay. All right. I'll take that. Thank you.